Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Maggie. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. I hope the winter isn't freezing your behind off.
No, it's been very pleasant, and we're about to head someplace even more warm, so we're looking forward to that.
Excellent. We're going to address in the first poems two abstracts that deal with an ignored organ in the body, the esophagus. Lots of diseases that affect the esophagus, but today we're going to talk about Barrett's esophagitis. This is the process when normal cells that line the lower part of the esophagus, the so-called squamous cells, are replaced by intestinal cells. It's thought that the process is a result of repetitive damage to the inside of the esophagus, and the most common insult is long-standing acid reflux disease or GERD, where the esophagus is repeatedly exposed to excessive amounts of stomach acids. For Barrett's, there are several risk factors that we know of, the most common being middle-aged and older adults and males. Ethnic background, Barrett's is equally common in whites and Latino populations, but for reasons that we don't completely understand, it's quite unusual in African-American and Asian populations, more commonly associated with smokers than non-smokers. The symptoms are problematic because Barrett's esophagitis usually produces no symptoms other than the GERD, which is obviously the heartburn and reflux type symptoms. Diagnosis is by endoscopy, and treatment is trying to control the reflux disease. The problem is that the intestinal cells have a higher risk of transforming into precancerous cells than other kinds of cells. The conventional teaching was that a very small percentage of these patients with Barrett's esophagitis develop esophageal cancer. The poems this week that you're going to talk about, one is from the New England Journal of Medicine and one is from the American Journal of Gastroenterology, and they sort of both address the issue of the annual incidence of esophageal carcinoma among patients who have Barrett's esophagitis. Mark, what do they find?
Yeah, these studies were similar and had generally similar findings, but a little bit different designs, and I think probably the better one and the one that's more relevant to our listeners is the one from the New England Journal. And this was an important question because, you know, if there's a high rate of these folks with BE going on to esophageal cancer, then, you know, there may be an argument made for surveillance on a regular basis, getting them scoped every year or some regular basis. But what they found was, this is actually a great study because they took basically the entire country of Denmark, and they had everybody in a registry, and for 17 years, they kept track of everybody who was diagnosed with Barrett's esophagus. And previous studies had found an annual incidence of esophageal cancer of around 0.5% to 0.6% among patients with BE. And what these guys did was they followed folks prospectively. There were 11,000 patients with BE, and they followed them for an average of 5 years after the diagnosis. During that time, there were 193 new cancers diagnosed, new esophageal cancers. The interesting thing is two-thirds were diagnosed during the first year of follow-up, and that's probably because that initial Barrett's diagnosis was actually incorrect. The person probably had an early cancer, and maybe they just biopsied the wrong part of the esophagus or missed it. So that's an argument for, you know, after the diagnosis of BE, going back 8 months to a year later and doing it again because there was a very high number of cancers found. But then each year after that, in years 2, 3, 4, and 5, they only had about a 0.1% per year. So previous studies had found 0.5 or 0.6%. They found 0.1%. The rate was higher in men than in women. Women, it was only 0.05%. And it was higher as you got older. So the rate was 2 in 10,000 for younger patients, 1 in 1,000 between 50 and 69, and 18 in 1,000 in folks over 70 years. And it was also higher in people who had low-grade dysplasia seen on their initial endoscopy. So certainly among younger patients and women and those without any dysplasia, very, very low risk of progression and would be very hard to make an argument for it. On the other hand, in people with low-grade dysplasia, older patients, especially older men, there's a higher risk of progression to cancer, and you might make a case for surveillance. Now, bottom line is we still don't have what we really need, which is a randomized trial randomizing patients with Barrett's to either surveillance or no surveillance and then seeing what happens. Is it worth subjecting 1,000 people to endoscopy every year to find one more esophageal cancer, which may or may not be treatable, even if we do find it? Remember, it's not a terribly, a cancer that's very amenable to treatment, even if you do find it, in a patient with Barrett's.
So a quick question, Mark. What's the thinking? If, in fact, Barrett's is thought to be due to acid reflux, if you take these guys and you control their acid reflux, say with proton pump inhibitors, does that make a difference?
Yeah, they looked at patients who had taken proton pump inhibitors and those that didn't, and they didn't see any difference in the rate of progression between those two groups. So the study was probably somewhat underpowered to find that difference if there was one, but they definitely didn't see any difference between those taking a proton pump inhibitor and those who weren't. The other study, really what it added was that patients with a longer duration of symptoms and a greater length of Barrett's esophagus are at greater risk of progression as well. Those were things that weren't looked at by the Danish study. So those are other things to consider when you're deciding, you know, how closely do we have to follow these folks.
Well, thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.